This is the Past Lives podcast, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. To get access to the extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. You can find the show notes for this and every other episode at my website. And this week I'm talking to Chris Lippincott about his book, Spirits Beside Us, Gain Healing and Comfort from Loved Ones in the Afterlife. Chris is a psychic medium. To say he's spent a long time developing his skills is an understatement. I counted 26 different courses on his website listed under Education and Development. And these include Advanced Mediumship and Excellence in Mediumship at the Arthur Findlay College, Mediumship Development Programme with James Van Praagh, Experimental Mediumship with Joseph Siegel, and the Platform Mediumship Programme with Lee Van Zyl. He is also Reiki Levels 1 and 2 certified. He is a member of the Spiritualist National Union International and also a minister ordained through the Universal Life Church. Hi Chris, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So I wanted to talk to you about your book. It's Spirits Beside Us, Gain Healing and Comfort from Loved Ones in the Afterlife. And you are a psychic medium.
I am.
And you had all sorts of experiences when you were young, but you kind of rejected them. And also you got kind of scared, which is exactly what would have happened to me as well.
That's absolutely right. When I was young, as many children do, I had a lot of experiences with people who I thought at the time were just great playmates. I thought they were fantasy playmates, the way a lot of children have. The difference was, of course, I should have taken notice when they were having full conversations with me and they could talk back. That was a little bit different. In hindsight, being 2020, I realized that, of course, back then when I was a young child, I was clearly already in communication with spirit, but I didn't yet realize it or have any idea what they were trying to do. I definitely did have times where it was nighttime and I would feel spirit trying to either contact me. Say, for example, when I was in bed and I'd feel a hand on my back, I would absolutely freak out. I would get completely scared because I knew there was nobody else around, didn't have any siblings. My parents were at the other end of the house. So I thought, oh my God, it's the monsters coming from underneath the bed. They're going to take me away and I'll never be seen again. I would hear voices in the middle of my room, again, thinking it was the monsters that were coming to take away. So at nighttime, I'd get quite scared. But during the daytime, everything was all wonderful because the sun was up and I felt all, confident and quite secure. But I also noticed there was a subtle difference because a lot of times I felt these, what I guess I'll refer to as sort of like an energy blanket, where I'd be walking along and I would just feel these effervescent champagne bubble tingles up and down my arms, around my back, kind of wrapping around my body. And when I was young, I didn't know what that was. It just felt like, I don't know, some outside force just connecting with me. And when I was young, of course, at nighttime, I would get absolutely disturbed by that. I'd run through our giant living room because it was an old converted barn. I'd run into my parents' arms and say, help. So yes, when I was young, I was absolutely terrified of the things that were going on because I didn't understand it.
And with your meditation later in life, was that the sort of feeling the where you knew that like your spirit guides were connecting with you?
Well, that's a good question, because when I first began meditating, it was really sort of in response to a stress-induced situation in my life. Because at the time I was working in finance, I was extremely stressed out. So I had to find a way to learn to cope with the stress. And eventually I stumbled upon meditation as a way to reduce the stress and deal with the stress. And then I began getting hooked on meditation. So every day for about 15 to 20 minutes, I'd meditate. And I would just meditate using basically a combination of different styles. So it wound up being a six-phase meditation. But after doing that every day, 15 to 20 minutes a day for probably about 12 months, there was one day during a very long, deep meditation where I happened to be kind of deep in my man cave. Every guy has to have a man cave, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in this meditation. And next thing I know, I see four profiles of these spirit people in my mind's eye, two to my left, two to my right, and the one all the way to my far right center was much taller than the rest. And he, I call it he because that was the only reference I had, shot this intense beam of energy through my chest, out my back. And I didn't know what was happening to me. And I knew I was wide awake because I could feel it. I could feel the physicality of the beam. So I knew I wasn't asleep and dreaming. And as that happened, I began to feel this overwhelming sense of love. And it wasn't human love, the way a person loves another. It was more all-encompassing, unconditional. It's the kind of love that the word love in the dictionary doesn't even begin to tap the tip of the iceberg. It was this all-encompassing, unconditional love. And I began to realize that I was not in this duality or separation of what we're all aware of. I became much more aware of a bigger existence that was more of a unity, where everything is the same and we're all tied together and we're all within the same force. And the common thread was love. And so that was really something that was sort of the reopening, if you will, the portal.
And it's interesting because I know, because you said in the book that you've read up on near-death experiences, and people come back from those experiences saying pretty much exactly that same thing about love.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the one thing I would say definitely is when you look at all the NDEs that are out there, is the consistent theme that comes back is a feeling of love, because the experiences every single person has had is the feeling of unconditional love, a tapestry of love that's woven with the thread of love. Everybody is love. Everything around them is love. There is nothing but love. And it's just this overwhelming power that you feel. And that was really what I kind of experienced. So whether or not I went for an astral travel or I was out of my body or what happened, I'm not entirely sure, other than I know this beam of energy went through, me, awoken, my abilities, awoke within me the ability to reconnect with spirit. And at that point, I began to realize that everything I was able to do henceforth was all about love. The ability to communicate with spirit, I had to do because of love. And I didn't know it really why, but I there was this sense in me that all the ability to speak with spirit, communicate with spirit, relay messages from spirit, it was all centered upon love. Why were they coming back to me other than because I was to go back and serve them in a sense of love? So just it was very much like a boomerang effect. You know, what goes around comes around, and it was just this feeling of love that was so tight and so strong that I really couldn't ignore it anymore.
Yes, it sounds like a very powerful, spiritually transformative experience you had, and it wasn't just some little sort of dream or hallucination.
No, it was fundamentally changing because clearly at that point, or perhaps right before that point, you know, I was this very logical kind of guy. I was in finance. I needed things to be proven to me. I mean, heck, I was a financial analyst. You can't get much more rational than that. You know, with my feet in the floor. You know, all right, you got to prove it to me. I'm a numbers guy, blah, blah, blah. Next thing I know, a couple hours later, I might as well have been like the Maharishi, you know, up in, somewhere in Tibet. It was totally different.
When you are, you know, you're doing a sitting with somebody and you're getting this information coming through from spirit, in the introduction, you say you encourage this man to blend his spirit with yours and overshadow you. And you even started doing dance moves. So how does that work?
Oh, it's very interesting. What winds up happening is that the spirit person, as the blending gets closer and closer and closer, it's really just a blending of my energy with the spirit person's energy. And if you remember, we're all energy, and that's been proven by science. You know, you can talk about quantum physics. We're all energy. We're essentially spirit incarnate, borrowing a temporary shell, borrowing this body for a limited amount of time, and then we go back to the spirit world. But we essentially are spirit right here, right now, in a physical plane. And when spirit discarnate and comes to merge with me, they're just blending their energy with the energy that I already have. We're both spirits. They're just not in a body at the moment. So our two energy systems come together and merge together. And as a result, I begin to feel their energy, and they can begin to work with my energy and start to move different parts of my body. They'll make me play the piano, or at least look like I'm playing the piano as my fingers begin to go up and down the scales. Or sometimes, as you just pointed out, I'll start to do silly dance moves where my voice will begin to change, and I'll become exceedingly vibrant and anticipatory. The way I speak changes, my intonations will change, the personality I start to talk in will change, and spirit kind of overshadows different parts of my personality, different parts of my thinking, different parts of my physicality. Very closely. And I try to encourage this because that enables spirit to become that much more real to the recipient. It's as if I'm painting spirit back to life. And it really gives the sitter that much more of a closer relationship to their loved one in spirit, as if they're really there in the room. And many times the recipient will say, I felt my loved one here in the room. They were here with me. I felt them because they too feel that same energy. They may not get overshadowed, but they feel their energy.
And how difficult is it for the spirits to do that? Is it this thing where they have to slow down their vibrations to our slow level so that they can blend with you?
Yeah, that's a good point. The spirit, because their vibrations are so much higher, because they are not in a physical existence, their vibrations are much higher. So if you want to take it back to, for example, our high school science, we know that in physical matter, the vibrations of molecules and atoms and subatomic particles are moving at vibrations that are exceedingly slow. In some cases, they're not even moving at all. But the vibration rate is so low in a physical piece of matter that there's low vibration, and that's kind of our existence. We're like that ice cube that's not really moving. You take it to the opposite spectrum of gas or plasma or even beyond, the subatomic particles, et cetera, are moving exceedingly rapidly. High oscillation rate, high vibration rate, the opposite end of the spectrum. And spirit is not even physical, so it's even beyond that. Because this was all dealing with different types of physical matter, spirit's not even on that spectrum, so it's even further, it's even higher. So yes, spirit has to slow down their vibration rate so that we can begin to increase our vibration rate and attempt to meet somewhere in the middle, which is the concept of what a medium is all about. The medium tries to meet somewhere in the middle as spirit tries to encompass their energy and their vibrations in that middle plane of existence, if you will. So that's really how they try to do it. And they try to work with different types of communication, different modalities that we all have to a point. It's just under the surface. For example, you know, we all have instinct, which is essentially part of our clairsentience. We all have that gut instinct, which lies in the solar plexus. You know, we can go out and say, well, gosh, I think I should bring that umbrella today. And then we just ignore it. And of course, we get soaked. Or we have that feeling where we meet somebody for the first time and we get that strange feeling, that strange vibe that we just don't think we should like them for some reason. We don't know why, but we get that feeling that we shouldn't like them and there's something wrong. That's, again, clairsentience. So it's we all have it. It's just a question of it lies beneath the surface. So if you begin to really harness that power that's within, develop it, unfold those abilities that we have, and spiritualize the self, we can really begin to work with all of our different modalities, from clairsentience to clairvoyance to clairaudience to all the different clairs that are in existence.
And in the book, you talk about dreams where your father came to visit and your grandmother came to visit. And what do you think it is about the dream state that makes us all open to these visits?
Well, yeah, that's important because a lot of people have dreams where they're not entirely sure whether it was spirit or whether it was just their imagination. There's a delineation between our typical dream and a spirit visitation. In a typical dream, we often wake up and we either have difficulty remembering it or it's really vague and meaningless and nonsensical. And we're like, what was that about? I have no idea. It's typically our subconscious getting rid of things or dealing with things or working with things. And it's just kind of like scrambled and we're not quite sure how to deal with it. Also, the other thing is that sometimes, you know, maybe we'll have nightmares. That's just, again, our subconscious just dealing with things. But with a dream visitation with spirit, it is so particular, so specific, and the details are so minute with every little thing. And not only is it specific and detailed and minute, but it is so memorable that we can remember all of those details for long periods of time. And when you begin to realize the difference of a typical dream versus a spirit visitation, it becomes really notable because you can feel it. You can feel the emotions. You can feel the tangible contact, the smells, the sight, the colors, the meaning, the message as you wake up. In that my dream with my father, I woke up with tears rolling down my face because it was so emotional. That had never happened to me before. And I remember with the dream with my grandmother, I was just absolutely flummoxed. And also another thing that happened in both of these dreams was the fact that both my father and my grandmother presented themselves as they wanted to be seen in essentially the prime of their life, much younger than they were. Because I can remember my grandmother when she was 88, and very frail, bent over, curly hair, white hair, just didn't look healthy. Yet when I saw her standing at the top of the stairs in this dream, she looked like the queen. I mean, yeah. It was amazing. She looked so regal. I was like, wow, and so young. And then when I saw my father, he was just, you know, probably in his 30s or 40s. I was like, my God, and tan. Yet when he was last I saw him before he died, he was just so sickly and pale and, you know, losing hair and gray hair. And you just knew he didn't have much time left. But when they show themselves to you, they're so vibrant. And in many cases, some ways, I mean, how could I know what my grandmother looked like when she was in her 30s? I had never seen a picture of her when she was in her 30s.
You've got a part in your book that is, what does the spirit tell us about their world? And I got so much information from your book about so many different parts of it. And it starts out, for some people after they die, they kind of go to a spiritual hospital.
Right. It's very interesting. When a person has had oftentimes a traumatic passing, or they haven't had resolved issues emotionally, quite often a spirit person will go to what I guess we might refer to as maybe a convalescent home, a spirit hospital, someplace that they can recover and relax and essentially be on holiday, if you will. It's a place where they don't have to get up and do anything. It's a place where they are just unconditionally loved and pampered, and they have other spirit professionals, I guess, if you want to call them that, who will cater to them, work with them, help them. They're very much like nurses who have been exceedingly well trained to deal with the emotional traumas or the upsets that perhaps this particular person might have had. And they're there to work with them and to ease them back into this transition. Because for some people, the transition might not necessarily have been a smooth one. They might have fought the transition. They may not have believed the transition. They may not, based on their belief or cultural system, they may not have believed that, in fact, they've died, or they may not believe that they've gone to another world. They may just be completely shocked, and they may really, really hesitate to be where they are. And so it becomes a struggle for them to be where they are, or in many cases, you know, they might have had a trauma. Maybe it was a tragic accident where they felt the trauma. They knew the trauma on a mental level, because they never feel it on a physical level, but they'll know it on an emotional level. And in some cases, they're brought to that spirit hospital. Or in other cases, we've heard of spirits where they may have been in a war, and perhaps a bomb went off and they were just immediately pulled out of their body as the bomb went off. They didn't realize what was happening. So to them, it's a little bit of a shock. So it's really this existence where they literally are allowed to just relax, be themselves, and be pampered. And depending on how long they need and how long they need to rest, that's, you know, really where they are. After they do that, we've often heard that they then in turn go to help others who are in need, whether that's because they go and serve in that spirit rest home, or they go to help people who are in transition because somebody helped them. What we often find is that those people who have been so incredibly helped, they go and in turn are, because they've been so amazed about what happened to them, they in turn then learn how to do it for somebody else. So we'll go, again, what goes around comes around.
And is this the same sort of place where you would go perhaps if you committed suicide? I suppose this is also linked to the thing of, is there a heaven and is there a hell?
Right. And that's always been the debate, because religions will say, well, you've committed a capital sin, so therefore you can't enter the gates of heaven. But remember that religion is a man-made institutional dogma and creed that forces its belief system on a large group of people, whereas spirituality is really sort of a one-on-one personal relationship with your own higher self, your own creator, if you will. So if you look at it from that perspective, from a spiritual perspective, it's all individualistic. And it's no, there's no one doctrine or creed that says this is going to happen or else. It's really what happens to your emotional system. So if a person, say, commits suicide, takes their own life, and is responsible for ending their own life before it was time, what they often learn is that, first off, they prevented themselves from learning so many lessons, because we all come down to the earth plane to learn lessons. It's the often referred to earth school. We come here to learn lessons, challenges, and to gain spiritual growth, to grow our spirit. It's very much like, perhaps with each incarnation, it's like we're coming back to a new school year. And every new school year, we perhaps are here to learn different lessons in different classrooms with different textbooks. And if that particular student on that classroom decides to skip school by committing suicide, they don't learn anything. They leave early, so they don't get the full education they came here for. So it's not so much of a capital sin as much as it is they're not learning what they're coming here for, and they realize that. And that is where they feel sadness for themselves. That's where it becomes an emotional issue, where they're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That was not smart of me. I really got to learn about this. And when that happens, other spirits around them, again, perhaps in this spirit convalescent home, come around them and are comforting and supportive and try to help them learn. It's not like, okay, you're going to sit in the corner with a dunce cap on and, you know, come back in 20 minutes. They're all there for support. They're all there to grow. They're all there to teach each other and to help each other. Remember, the spirit world is composed of love. It's all about love. And the higher the degree of love, the higher the different planes, the higher the different spheres that the spirit people can get to. I mean, we can probably talk to that in a minute. But it's all about the degree of love. And if everybody there is about love, it's just a question of, is that spirit person learning to love themselves enough? And I think that's really the crux of it. That's why they come back in so many readings and they say, gosh, I'm so sorry. First off, they feel bad that they hurt all their loved ones here in the physical, because they know they've done, you know, they've caused a tremendous amount of upset. But they also say, gosh, I really realize I messed up my own spiritual growth and my own reason that I was here. So it's an understanding, it's an evolution for them.
Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. I've got so many questions. This could go off in so many different directions. There is one thing I wanted to ask about. We were talking about just after death, you'd end up in this kind of spiritual hospital. And when you get there, whether you go there or not, you're still yourself. And so you have your own kind of built-in self-image. And you said that your father and grandmother in the dreams presented themselves in their prime. So is this something that when you first arrive there, you're just still you, but over time you learn to change how to present yourself? And then do you just eventually just leave the human form behind?
Yeah, no, that's actually very, very astute. What winds up happening is we may go there as we are now, and we think that we are what we are because we've been conditioned on the earth plane to think that everything that we see and touch, that's it. As we transition, if you recall in the book, we as a human form have an energy body, a series of seven energy bodies. And it's those seven energy bodies that are all like Russian nesting dolls. They all go up together. And then over time, as the spirit continues to grow in the spirit realm, each one of those spirit bodies will continue to progress upwards, leaving behind or shedding a different spirit body. So the initial concept of self when a person transitions initially is what we see right now. As time progresses, they begin to realize, hey, everything that's around me is based on thought, because thoughts become things. I'm a thought, I'm energy, and I realize that everything that I can do, I can create by thought alone, because there is no physicality. They can create houses by thought. They can create wonderful mansions or cars or whatever it is that their hearts desire just by thought, because there's nothing limiting at that step, at that point. So as they begin to realize that their thought transference becomes so critical, they then realize, I am going to be the best of myself that I've ever been, and I'm going to go back to my prime, the way that I want to be, the true essence of me. Who was I when I was at my best? And typically, most spirits will go back to the point in their life that they can recall when they were at their best. And that's usually part of their thought process. They present themselves how they like to be, because it's all part of thought. So that's really sort of like the big takeaway, is the power of thought. And I think one thing that I can recall spirit mentioning multiple times in many automatic writings that have been given the last 150 years or so, is that they're all so surprised how powerful thought is, and they wish that humans in the physical could harness the power of thought. There are a lot of people who, in fact, have learned that thought power is tremendous. I mean, all we need to do is look at the movie The Secret and many other movies like that. The power of thought is so large, but for some reason, yeah, it's the physical mind that seems to get in the way.
Yeah, it's a kind of dumbs down the experience, doesn't it? It's what we see from people have near-death experiences. They come back and they say, well, you know, it's like the living in a body is like the dream where everything's dull. And when you leave the body, then you see what the universe is really like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's something in the book that I was mentioning where I think one of the NDEs had explained it exceedingly well. It's very much like when we are here in the physical, we're very much like we are in a warehouse with a flashlight and the lights are out. And all we have is a very narrow focus of that flashlight. And it's really kind of black and white, basically. And we don't really get to see much on either side. We don't get to see very far. But then all of a sudden, as we transition, it's like somebody turns on the lights in that warehouse and we see this massive space, this gigantic space all around us, forever going on, forever and ever, all kinds of colors, this kaleidoscope of colors. And it's like we were wearing earmuffs before, but finally somebody took off the earmuffs. And now we hear this cacophony of sounds that we had never heard of before. Or go back to the sounds. We'll hear the sounds, see the colors that we'd never seen before. So it's all these things that we hadn't seen or heard before or experienced before. That's why spirit often says that they feel like they were dreaming while they were in the physical. That when they transition to the non-physical, they feel like they've woken up from a bad dream.
You know, in a way, it's a wonder that people who have near-death experiences don't kind of yearn more to go back onto the other side.
Well, they do. They do. That's actually something that's so interesting, is that there's so many times where you have heard of people who have had a near-death experience get upset when they're forced back. I can remember this one woman had a near-death experience. She was in a hospital, and she was just beside herself. It was just so sad that she had to be back in this horrible earth plane. For her, it was just abysmal because she saw this beautiful existence where she was. And then they said, sorry, not your time yet. Got to go back. And she's like, what? Wait a second. I don't want to go back.
And who can blame her?
Exactly.
You talk about angels in the book, and that's something that I've become more and more interested in. Because when I started doing this podcast, I thought angels, oh, that's all religious stuff. That's not really what I'm interested in. But the more guests I talked to and the more books I read, it became more apparent to me that actually this is something they're kind of spirits or souls who are not so much, I think, wearing white robes and playing harps with big white wings. There's something else. So how would you define them?
No, I think you're spot on. I felt exactly the same thing. I began to think of angels as all religious, and I was like, oh my gosh, here we go, church time. Let me run the other direction. Because before I had any of these spiritual experiences, I was, for all intents and purposes, an agnostic. I was like, okay, maybe I'll go to church on Christmas or something. Then I, had my awakening, and then I had to start realizing I was spiritualizing the self. But what began to happen was that in some of my meditations, I started seeing people come to me that looked exactly like angels. I'm like, wait, what am I seeing? Is this my imagination, or is there something more to the eye or the mind rather? Because I started having experiences where in my meditation, I would get taken up by the hand by these beautiful, in some cases, they were young ladies, and they would just we wouldn't fly, but we would just float up to another part of space, and then the clouds would break and we'd continue on. And I remember looking back going, that looked like an angel. I'd have to shake my head saying, no, that can't be. But it kept on happening over and over again. And I remember one time having a very dramatic meditation experience where this woman essentially came out of a tiny little white ball in the distance, and it started getting closer and closer and started taking this form that began to look like this white oblong object that eventually turned into a human form. And this beautiful woman in her 20s with white skin, porcelain white skin, big eyes, and a just long silky dress that was kind of moving like it was being gently blown in a breeze. And then I looked at the collar of her dress. I was like, wow, that's really a tall collar. And then I began to realize that wasn't the collar. I started saying, wait a second, those are wings. And again, this kept on happening to me all the time. And I just had to come to the very slow, reluctant realization that I'm experiencing some interactions with angels, even though I didn't want to believe that's what they were. Because the more I got involved with it, the more I had to do my own investigation into angels. And I began to realize that angels, while they have a lot of historic significance, you know, throughout the ages, they are nothing more than spirits who have never touched the earth plane. They've never become physical. And they are really messengers from the divine creator. And why do they exist? What's their purpose? And what's their abilities? They're here to try to more than just guide us, because we all have spirit guides to work with, but they're here to really pass the true meaning of you know, the creator's unconditional love. And what's so special about them is that they have the ability to be in multiple places simultaneously and share all those same messages simultaneously. And spirit guides are typically individual, unique, and single task entities, whereas angels are multitasking and can be in multiple places at once. And in fact, quantum physics has proven that there is the ability of any item to be in multiple places at any given time simultaneously. So that would give the theory that angels could theoretically very much exist. And the number of people who have had experiences with angels just continues on forever.
And there are signs as well from the spirit world and also from angels. It's because I interviewed somebody who said that they leave feathers, and I was like, okay. And then a week after that, a feather just fell out of the sky right in front of me, and there were no birds around. And then,
I'm sorry, go on.
I interviewed a medium a few weeks later, and I mentioned that to her, and she said, oh yeah, that they leave signs for you with the feathers. And I finished the interview and I went downstairs, and in my daughter's bedroom, in the middle of the floor, there was a feather, and it was a completely clear carpet. You know, where did it come from? And then again, it happened to me. I had a sitting with a medium, and I sat opposite her in her house for an hour, and we were talking about signs and feathers. And she said, look at the floor. And then there was a feather there, right in the middle of the carpet in between us. And I've got no idea where they came from. And so these signs, yeah. I think they happen all around us all the time, but sometimes they're really subtle.
That's a great way of saying it, is that the signs that we are so desperately searching for are usually either A, right in front of us, and we don't even realize that's what it is. We don't even realize that it's a sign, or it's so obvious that we don't even think that it's a sign. So it's either exceedingly subtle or exceedingly obvious. And in most cases, we don't see, we're looking for right in the middle. But we'll often see feathers. We'll often see particular objects. In many cases, we'll see, in fact, I was just giving a reading to a woman recently, and I started talking about a rose, and there's some significance to a rose. And I said, your aunt is really bringing up a rose as being very important. And at first, the woman couldn't figure that out. And then she gets home, and she sees by her house a gigantic rose bush that was not in bloom at all, except for one gigantic rose that was staring her in the face. Yeah. And you see this kind of thing happen all the time. And we see signs and spirits always leaving signs for us to say, hey, we're still alive, we're still here, we're still in existence. And many cases, it'll be, doesn't even have to be an object. It can actually be activity. Spirit, being electrical energy, loves playing with electronics, loves playing with electricity. It can be either a light flickering on and off, or getting turned on by itself, or a cell phone starting to ring and it's coming up with the numbers of a loved one who might have passed. Or there's nobody up at the other end of the phone, or there was some time where I can remember reading a story about a couple of meetings where we're at a diner once, and all of a sudden all of the cars in the parking lot, simultaneously, every single one of their car alarms went off. It's the number of stories you hear, it just goes on and on, but it's like the spirit just loves to work with us and they'll always leave us some kind of sign to let us know that they're there.
You talk about the seven spheres in the spirit world, and it's a kind of, I don't know if you call it a hierarchy, but you can't move up unless, is it your vibrations are fast enough? If you move up spiritually.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You know, there are definitely seven spheres in the spirit world, and it's I'd refer to it as kind of like an architecture, and it is based on a combination of your vibration rate and perhaps the level of spiritual growth and love that you've attained, because ultimately your vibration rate is determined by the amount of spiritual growth and love that you've learned or gained. And as you grow that much more and love that much more, your vibrations are going to continue to increase. And as a result, you're going to become brighter and brighter as an energy yourself. So it's all about light energy, love energy, spiritual growth. And the analogy I often use is the reason you can't move up into a higher plane or a higher sphere if you don't have the right vibration rate is not so much that you're not welcome. And it's not so much that, oh, well, you don't have the right paperwork. It's more about the fact that it's so uncomfortable being in that intense light that you can't stand being there. Imagine, for example, you got really used to like a really dark room, and then all of a sudden somebody turns on these intense bright white lights and you're blinded and you just can't see. And you're like, oh God, I got to get out of this room. This hurts physically. It's very much like that. It physically hurts so that you don't want to be in that space. So that's the analogy I would use as to each successive sphere is higher vibration, higher light intensity, higher love intensity. It's just that much more intense, and it's that much more focused on the ability of the individual spirit to have greater love and light. Now, because of that, a high level spirit person can go down into a sphere that's below them, just like we could go down into our basement and take a look around our basement without the lights on. That's not going to hurt us. We can go look around and see things. But if we tried to go into that really, really bright, bright, bright room, we'd squint and we'd be, ah, that hurts. We wouldn't want to go in. Same idea, I guess. It's kind of the way I try to describe it.
And is this linked to reincarnation? Is every life you learn lessons, you become more spiritual, and so you're more able to move up the spheres?
Well, at least that's what you try to do. The reason that spirits often come back is to learn different lessons. And perhaps you might have come back in one incarnation to learn a set of lessons. You may have learned all of those lessons, or maybe you didn't. So you could come back to reincarnate to try to learn those lessons yet again in a different form. But more often than not, you are going to learn the majority of the lessons you came to learn, And then when you're learning your soul plan in between lives, you begin to realize, okay, now I want to start adding some new lessons to my lesson plan. I want to start learning new things. I want to continue to grow. I want to expand myself. And it's ultimately about, are you growing yourself? Are you growing your spirit? Are you growing to the point where you've learned so many different things that you can begin to take yourself and learn to love? Because again, it all comes back to love. Are you learning lessons in patience? Are you learning lessons in trying to see what it's like to be on the other side? Maybe it's empathy that you need to learn. These are all just different facets of the same thing. Different angles, perhaps, different, you know, portions of what's really crucial to be able to grow ourselves, grow our love. And the greater love you have, the greater the vibration you may have, the greater the ability that you'll have to move up to a higher sphere. And if you look at different writings, for example, one of the best series of writings of automatic writing was from James Paget, a lawyer in Washington, D.C. in the 19-teens, who had lost his wife. And she kept on coming back at automatic writings and describing all the different spheres, and described how she was moving up the different spheres. Her mother was coming back. She was describing how she was moving up the different spheres. So you really get this fantastic picture of the architecture of what is required, what happens to these people, how they learn how to do this. It's just a wonderful understanding.
Right. So, okay. So let's say that you've gone through that process and you've moved up to the very highest level. And then what? What do you do?
Well, the very highest level, say you've got the seventh level. And then once you've got these, you've passed into the seventh level, then above that you have the the celestial heavens. It's referred to as celestial heavens, which is considered to be the kingdom of Christ, in that at that point you are considered to have an eternal life, in that your spirit will eternally be in a strong one-on-one relationship with the Creator. And at this point, there's really only been a handful of people relative to all the spirits that exist throughout time, who've actually gotten to the celestial heavens. Many of them have been ascended masters. Many of them have been, you know, disciples of Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha, or many of the different people who've carried wonderful spiritual wisdom with them. And that's really where you happen to be. And the celestial heavens, like, they too have different spheres, different levels. So even within that, you can continue to progress upwards. And eventually, you're getting closer and closer and closer to divine source energy until ultimately you become one with the Creator. You never lose your individuality, but you've blended with source. You've become almost part of source.
What is source? Because this is probably an impossible question, isn't it? Who really knows? But because you talked about the divine creator, which is kind of like saying God, but then as soon as you use the word God, that's got a whole ton of baggage with it, hasn't it?
Right. That's why I like to avoid using the word God, because God is the connotation is religious. And unfortunately, people are so focused on religion that they wind up unable to see the forest for the trees. So I'll back off from God, and I refer to this as the divine, or source energy, or the universal unconscious, or the universal consciousness. It's all the same thing, because if the divine creator or God or whatever name you want to attach to it, it's all the same, but it's just pure unconditional love. There is no knowledge of anything that's not pure love. And so when God or divine source or the creator thinks of each one of us, all God knows, sees, and feels is unconditional love. Because if you want to look at it from a sphere, think of God as pure unconditional love with no knowledge of anything that's not unconditional love. So it has no knowledge of anything that's not unconditional love. And so when it looks at each one of us, it sees and feels only love, pure love for us. In fact, that was one of the most amazing things when I had my awakening. I felt this unbelievable feeling that for some bizarre reason, I was perfect. And I couldn't understand that. It was unfathomable to me. Why in God's name could I possibly be perfect? I'm like, wait a second. I'm just a, you know, regular blow here, and I'm a horrible person. You know, number of times I've done bad things. How can I be perfect? I had this terrible view of myself. My self-esteem was, you know, I might as well have been in the trash bin. And I was like, how could I be perfect? But it's not the way we see ourselves. It's what our spirit energy really is. So we, in fact, are perfect, because ultimately we are all part of God. We are all children of God. We all have the God spark within us. We all come from the same source material, whether you want to think about it from astrophysics like stars or energy, or you want to look at it from the divine, we all come from the same source, and that's undebatable. And it's like, you know, that's just something that we know. And so energetically, we're all coming from the same source. We're all related, and that's where unity comes in. That's why it's so important to understand that unity, not only in the spirit world, but also in the physical world, we're all the same. We're all related. We're all brothers and sisters. And I remember thinking long ago when I started hearing, you know, people in church or, you know, anywhere else going, oh, it's brothers and sisters. I thought to myself, oh my God, what do they mean? But then I figured it out. We are, because we're all related. We're all made of the same stuff. We all have the same energy. We all have the same spirit. We all have the same God spark within us. And we all have the same Father. We're all from the same source energy. That's really what it's all about.
So to finish off, because we're running out of time, but I've still got a million questions here. But what I wanted to ask you about was towards the end of the book, you've got a few readings chapter. And I wanted to ask if there's a couple there that really stand out for you.
Yeah, the one that really stands out was probably the one where the woman and her husband came to see me, and they connected with their brother, the woman's brother. And it was so amazing, because when I first sat down, there was an empty chair to my right. And I remember putting my right arm on the side of the chair to my right. And as soon as I did that, I just felt this intense energy, like I was putting my arm through like this time warp. And I realized I was putting my arm right through the spirit being that was sitting right next to me in the chair to my right. And I realized that was this woman's younger brother. And he was so intense, and he came through so clear. It was so emotional. It was amazing. And he was showing me every single thing that he had done. He was giving me all these amazing remote viewings of where they had been on their vacation, where they had been during all the traumatic times. And the clincher was when he showed me the remote viewing when he was getting wheeled down the hospital. I felt like I was one of the orderlies pushing the gurney. The spirit person, this younger man, was in the gurney, and I could see everything that was wrong with him, and I was pushing him down the emergency hallway, crashing through the doors, and I could tell this woman every single thing that was about this young man. And then eventually we scaled back, and I could tell her where he was, because then he started showing me his life in the spirit world, and he started showing me the different colors and the different hills and the different places that he was in. And it just became this really quite an amazing experience. And you could just really see the transformational love, because that's what these readings are about. Spirit comes through to heal the loved ones here in the physical world. When she arrived first, she was just a ball full of tears. I mean, she was so upset. She just couldn't even talk. At the end, she, you know, was just like this light was, the sunshine was on her face. This beautiful smile was on her face. She had been so transformed. And that's the healing that spirit brings. And it's so amazing. And it's this beautiful transformative love that makes me do what I do. It's why I do it, because it's so healing for everybody. And in the process, I kind of got healed too.
So can you tell us about your website? And if people want to book sittings with you now, do you do that? Do you do it through Zoom or something like that?
Yeah, for the time being, given the pandemic we're in right now, I've been working with Zoom, and that actually has been working very well because, of course, spirit is non-physical, so they don't really care where we are. But it's also extremely easy because nobody has to travel anywhere. You know, it can just be in their bedroom just getting a reading. It's quite easy, and I've actually expanded my practice now globally, everywhere from the UK to Australia to India, all across the US. It's so easy. You don't have to travel anymore. So maybe I'll just keep on doing this forever. I don't know. Yeah. but if people want to give me a booking, and they can either call me up or they can email me. My phone number is area code in the States. It's area code 201-578-6020. Or if people want to email me, they can email me at chris@montclairmedium.com. And if they want to kind of look at my website, then they can just look on the web at www.montclairmedium.com.
And the book is on Amazon and other places.
Yep. Book is on Amazon. It's been on the bestseller list now probably for about 4 months. So it's doing really well. And I'm just tickled pink by all the reviews that people are leaving, because they're just, it's clear that my goal to try to just help people seems to be getting achieved as people, you know, read this and begin to understand it.
Are you going to write another book?
Absolutely. I'm in the process of right now. So it's in the pipeline.
Well, you have to email me when it's finished and then come back on the podcast.
Okay, I definitely will.
Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for being a guest.
Well, thank you so much, Simon. It was quite a pleasure.
And that was an interview with Chris Lippincott about his book, Spirits Beside Us, Gain Healing and Comfort from Loved Ones in the Afterlife. And don't forget, there's a great way to support the podcast if you sign up to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. My Instagram is pastlivespodcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I am @SimonGBown. And there's a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.